You know, folks, it's championship weekend. Championship Sunday's upon us. There's two games to talk about. But what am I kidding? There's competency. There's sanity.
Yo, baby.
Oh, there's just so much going on with, and also have to do the shirt reveal I got for Christmas. It's nice.
Ooh, I like it.
Yep. Super Bowl 36. But the Patriots have hired Bill O'Brien to be the not only the offensive coordinator, but the quarterback's coach.
Yep.
That's the big caveat in all that. And it's like the perfect week to be a Patriots fan because, look, we have competency in our organization once again. And the Buffalo Bills got eliminated from the playoffs. So it's like,
yeah, you love to see it.
Yeah. Oh, if you want to add stuff to other stuff, Nathaniel Hackett now is the OC in New York.
Yeah, I saw that. We'll see how it works out. We'll see how it works out. I think it's exciting for fans of the AFC East team, though. I just don't – not a believer. I'm not a believer.
Yeah, that's just the thing. But getting back to our situation, it's just that it's the competency. I know there's a lot of people that were kind of like going towards, you know, how some of the candidates they were hiring was just like the play face. But at the same time, too, I feel like for all those guys out there like Adrian Clem, Sean Jefferson, et cetera, I know a lot of people are using the Rooney rule and stuff like that, but I think that, hey, maybe it may be like, hey, we know you're going for the OC job. You may not necessarily get it, but like nudge, nudge, wink, wink. There's going to be something open for you.
Yeah. Yeah. A few people had caught on to that like really early into the process when they first announced that they were bringing in Keenan McCardell. There were a number of smart people who were like, I don't know if he'll be an offensive coordinator, but you almost kind of wonder. I mean, the elephant in the room throughout the entire process was that Billy O was the leader in the clubhouse. Everyone kind of had it like, all right, yeah, the Patriots are going to bring in Bill O'Brien and all that. And so they went through the interviews, and I think, you know, I think there's one school of thought where people are like, oh, you know, it's like a sham, and they brought in these guys who had no chance or whatever it was. But I really do think the Patriots are looking to kind of hedge against what happened with McDaniels, where when he left, he took a bunch of dudes with him, and you know, the Patriots simply didn't recover. So I think they're really just trying to hedge against that by bringing in multiple people that you may not want as coordinators now, but who could develop into coordinators down the line. I think that's kind of why they brought in Adrian Clem, and we see that the reports are out there that they have another meeting with him about whether or not he'll be the O-line coach, presumably O-line coach, because I guess they didn't really say what he'd be doing. But, common sense tells you he'd be coming in to be the O-line coach, especially because the Patriots need one. Yeah, it's got a little obvious. Sean Jefferson and Keenan McCardell is kind of the same thing. They're both wide receiver coaches right now. The only thing is I don't know what their contract situation is, so they could theoretically be blocked from making a lateral move, coaching wide receivers in Minnesota and then coming here to coach wide receivers. The Vikings could say, hey, no, thank you, and then they can, hang on to Keenan McCardell if they still have his rights or whatever the case is there. And they also interviewed Nick Caley, the tight ends coach. And I saw that one, and from the very beginning, it felt like a courtesy thing, like, oh, you work for us and we're, interviewing and, we're going to throw you a bone and kind of, interview you and get your name into the,
an experience pod interview.
Yeah, exactly right. Because he was already, interviewed for the Jets OC job. Obviously, he didn't get it.
Yep.
But I figured something like that, especially if his contract is expiring, like many of us believe, right? Because I remember it was reported last offseason that this would be his last year.
Yeah.
So I think it might have just been a kind of a courtesy kind of thing, like, hey, get your name in the circles. Something like nine teams remaining still need an OC. And we'll see how it is after this weekend, if that number goes up or goes down. But nine teams need OCs. So you give the guy that, has been with you for the last, 4 years, you give him the opportunity, get his name in the cycle and get people thinking. Cause it really only takes one team to hire you, obviously. And maybe, some team didn't have him on the radar, saw his name floated in the Patriots OC search and thought, oh, he interviewed with the Patriots. He interviewed with the Jets. Maybe we should look into him too. So that's how I feel about the whole Nick Caley thing. I think he's a coach who never had a shot at the OC job, just pure speculation. Mainly because if he did, I don't think we would have had the the shitstorm that we had last year with Patricia and Judge just kind of taking turns, you know, screwing it up.
Yeah. I think the exact same way. Like Nick, the way I view the Nick Haley interview, and even with the Jets, I think we're seriously in them. I had some Jets fans asking me like, oh, hey, like, is this a for real thing? And I said, I don't know. But the way I view a Nick Haley thing is like through my personal experience. Look, I'm not a football coach or anything, but it's like when you're going for a, when you apply for a job at your place, like say if you're going for promotion at work and you may go into the interview. I've been told this before. They're like, hey, you're probably not going to get it. And I basically say, I'm straight up here for the experience and wanting to show people I'm ready to advance my skills within the workplace. So it's one of those things that comes back and relates to everyday life, even for people like us. So look, we come on here, we talk football, but at the same time too, we have that 9 to 5. Yep. So that's just how it goes. But for the most part with this team, it's just, and I was even talking to a Giants fan about this, where we both agreed, we're both happy, where it's like there's stability and there's just, you can trust the play calling in the whole process.
Yeah.
And for that, for next year, am I going to come on here and say, oh, division winners, we're back, see you in Vegas? No. But you can't argue that this team that finished 8-9 can't go, 10-7? Especially if you look at some of the teams that we play. We do have, like, unlike last year, we have the third place schedule this year, which means Saints, Steelers, and Colts, apart from the AFC West. So it's just one of those things where it's like a big wait and see. But I feel like if you are a Patriots fan, have a lot of confidence. And now it's just kind of the whole, hey, let's see how free agency goes. Let's see how the draft plays out. But I know you and I have talked about this last time, and you got me on board with it where I think, you know what, go solve your offensive tackle problems in free agency and then deal with quarterback in the draft and then receiver. Look, there's some names to trade for, and there's a couple of spicy ones I still believe in because – I don't want to put all my eggs in a nuclear basket, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. I've kind of also moved a little bit off the whole DeAndre Hopkins thing, and I think the whole Bill O'Brien hiring kind of, you know, kind of plays a part in that. Yeah, I don't know DeAndre Hopkins at all, and I don't know Bill O'Brien at all, and I'm not going to make any definitive statements on people who I don't know, right? I'm not going to be like, oh, well, 100%. DeAndre Hopkins doesn't like him or whatever the case is there. But
had a bad falling out of Houston.
Sure. I would say given how things ended there, I think it would be unlikely, and I think Mike Reese kind of put it in a good, you know, put it in good perspective. He's 30 years old. He'll be 31 when the season starts. He is looking for a new contract. He's already on the books for about $20 million this year, and I think $15 or $14 million next year. So he obviously wants that adjusted. That has been clear from the Cardinals organization. Sources there were saying that, fine, whatever the case is there. I think, though, there are other options out there, and I don't want to end up setting myself up for disappointment where I'm just like, oh, yeah, it's DeAndre Hopkins or bust.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, it's really based on that, the NFL films clip from before the Patriots played them, and you know, he said, you know, hey, I do my job, and him and Bill had that talk. And so everyone,
the lovey-dovey moment.
Yeah. So everyone's like, oh yeah, this is definitely the one. I think there are some legitimate options out there, including some that people have really soured on that I really don't understand. That I don't understand within the context. So one such player, briefly, is Michael Thomas from the Saints, right? I understand he hasn't really played very much and he's been hurt. But I have, you know, I've seen people saying, oh, no, absolutely not, absolutely not. And I'm like, yeah, he'd come here and still be the best receiver here. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I understand your skepticism for sure.
Yeah.
But people saying like outright no or, oh, he can't play. And I'm like, I don't know, man. You kind of see what the Patriots are rolling with. And granted, I like the Patriots receiving group. I still do think they need a more threatening receiver, right? They need someone who, like, all right, cool. That's the guy we got to watch for. Because right now, I like Devontae Parker. He's not someone that scares you, though. I like Jacoby Myers, who may or may not be back. But again, he's absolutely not someone who scares you.
When the Bears give him a bag,
or the Bills. I've seen people saying Bills, and I'm like, oh, that'd be kind of spicy. But I don't know if they can really afford that because I believe they're over the cap for this.
They're 21st season in the league right now in cap. I think they're like $2 million over or something like that.
That's hideous.
They are basically, the way I've been put it from Bills reporters is, credit card spending and the bills coming.
Yeah.
So unless you can get guys like Milano, Knox, or Allen to all restructure, it's going to be very tough for them to sign a lot of players.
For sure. And especially given how they went out, that's a tough look.
It's like the GIF I tweeted out on Sunday where it's just, oh, the Eric Cartman tears of unfathomable sadness. It's like, so yummy. But the one thing I just want to say, I know I said the Myers thing quickly about like, oh, the Bears are going to give him a bag. I only say that because look, that team has done stupid with receiver before. Just play pool for a second. And you also see that they have a lot of cap and they need receiving help. And I feel like I'd love to keep Myers, but if someone throws money at him, I'm going to say, okay, you go do you. It's the same thing too with like the Damian. Like when I literally saw tweets today with the Patriots where everyone's thinking, oh, hey, they just have to add this and they're fine. No, you got to worry. I know we talked about the tight end situation a couple weeks ago, but I saw the article today. I think it was Mark Daniels. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think he's from the Boston Globe. Was saying that the Patriots owe $33 million to the two of them next year. So I think either someone's getting restructured or someone's getting traded or cut.
As unpopular, I know you really enjoy Hunter Henry and you said good things happen when Hunter Henry gets the ball. I think he's going to be the one. If either of them gets moved, I think he's going to be the one based on salary and the fact that he's on the last year of his deal. You can probably move him. He won't be back next, the year after next regardless.
Yeah.
So I think he would be the one, and he's been more productive. So I think he's the one you're more likely to get.
Especially if you're bringing in a receiver for trade.
Correct. So, you can move him for something and then, get his money off the books. And I know that upsets a lot of people because for whatever reason, John New engenders a lot of hate among the fan base. I don't really understand it. They just haven't used
him properly. That's a thing.
Yeah. I'm like, it's not even his fault either. It's like people are saying things about John New that just simply aren't true. They're like, oh, yeah, he's like never open or he just drops passes. And I'm like, I don't know. He was targeted 37 times. He caught 27 of them, and he kind of just did what he did with the opportunities he was given. And all of his passes came within like the line of scrimmage, right? Like within a few yards of the line of scrimmage. His deepest target on the season was 10 yards. Like 10 yards. That's absurd. But that's neither here nor there. As far as the Patriots receiving situation, I think the whole Jacoby Myers. I would like Jacoby Myers back because I really 100%. Like him. But I think you can move forward with Kendrick Bourne in that same role. They're slightly different players, but they're both slot guys. So you can kind of stick them there. And also, I think in the draft there are some players that would fit what Jacoby does, and you can get them here on say Flowers, or someone like Jackson Smith and Jigba from Ohio State, right? I know people are really souring on him as well. They're like, oh, he's just an average athlete. He doesn't do anything well. He kind of reminds me of Jarvis Landry, where he'll give you 800, 900 yards a year every year for like 8 years. You'll be fine.
It's also too like Ohio State is a wide receiver factory right now, and I'm sorry, but there's Marvin Harrison Jr. there who's probably going to go top 10 next year.
Yep,
it's a little tougher to judge. Plus, Smith and Jigba was hurt. But I've just heard nothing good because shout out Keegan Stiefel, Ohio State fan, Nesson reporter. But he has been on that train. He's got me on that train. Like, he had me on the Chris Olave train before anyone knew
Chris Olave. I was like, well, actually, you're right. He is him.
But even the other thing, too, with that is last year at Ohio State, everyone for Wilson and Olave, whose stocks were high, both had amazing rookie years with the Jets and the Saints.
Yep.
Everyone at Ohio State in 21 was saying, but Jackson Smith and Jigba is the best receiver. If you want to see proof, guys, go watch the 2021 Rose Bowl. He balled out in that game. So that's why this year he was hurt. And it's one of those things where, look, if he drops and he's there at 14 or even somehow if he slides into the second round, do what you did in 2021 with the Christian Barmore. You trade up, you get rid of 46, and maybe get rid of the Carolina third-round pick, for example. And go get Smith and Jigba if he's still there. And say if he's there by like the mid-30s. I'm not saying like right at 33, 34, but like 37, 38, 39.
Yeah, if he's within striking distance, you can probably go up and make it happen. I don't really understand why people are souring on him. I know that he's not
recency bias.
He's not a freaky athlete as well. He's not like super fast. He's quick. I think he has really good quicks. I think people are overthinking his evaluation though. But outside of him, there are a number of receivers who I think would fit what the Patriots are doing or are hoping to do. And I think they'll have their pick of the litter, right? They're picking at 14. And if you've watched this wide receiver class, I don't think there's anyone who goes before 14. Maybe, 12-ish. You can go as high as like 12. But for the most part, the Patriots are going to be able to pick whatever receiver they want. I don't think they take one in the first round, but, they'll have their pick of their litter. So I don't necessarily know that you have to, exert yourself to keep Jacoby Myers as much as I would like that personally.
Exactly. That's the thing too, where it's like, because I feel like with this draft, the first 13 picks, it's going to be quarterbacks, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, Will Anderson, because like this is a very tackle heavy class. Like guys like Peter Skorinski, among others, Paris Johnson, and then you're going to have the quarterbacks go because look, I'm not saying I'm being bullish on him, but someone I think is going to shoot for the moon with Will Levis. And I think Anthony Richardson possibly is going to get in the top 10 as well. So those are things to consider.
That would be something to see.
Stupid teams do stupid things. That's the thing.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
Dysfunctional teams do dysfunctional things.
I like Richardson. I think he's just going to end up on the wrong team. A team that's just going to be like, oh no, he has to be a pocket passer. And we're not going to let him run. And I'm just like, I don't really want to watch that because what makes him special is his ability to create plays.
Yes.
He's going to end up on some team who's going to be like, no, you must stand in the pocket and throw, 52 curl routes a game. Like, I don't really want to see that. But you're right. I think it is going to be a matter of corners are going to go.
Yes,
I think you're going to see quarterbacks and offensive linemen, especially tackles, because at this point, every team needs a tackle except the Eagles for whatever reason. Every team needs a tackle, so...
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, right now, left tackle, like I said, look, Trent Brown, he had a bad year. His dead cap's $1.25 million. So if he gets cut March, when his free agency start? I want to say it's March 15th or 16th. So if he gets cut, then it's one of those things where you can look at it where you're like, okay, hey, you can bite the dead cap. It is what it is. Yeah. He'll find a new home. Someone will make him happy. And then Isaiah Wynn, obviously gone. So we'll bring in some guys. We'll see what happens there. But all in all, this is going to be a draft where it's like, hey, just expect the unexpected in a way. Because I know everyone's on the whole, trade Justin Fields, do X, Y, and Z. I'm just like, give Fields another year. And then if by next year you're still in that same position, look, you can go get Caleb Williams. But I agree with you with Richardson. My only other thing is, though, I feel like him and Levis should go to teams where, they're not going to start right away.
Yeah, give them a little time to acclimate. Absolutely. Like
if you're the Lions, go after Levis, for example. Not
that would be amazing.
Yes.
Like, or the Seahawks. The Seahawks, go after Richardson. Let him develop behind Geno. Give Geno another 2 years and, go from there. Although we don't really live in that NFL anymore where at this point, like, guys get taken and it's like, hey, you got to get out there. You got to play because coaches are coaching for their jobs out there.
And the only other thing, too, I want to say, I feel like there's only a handful of coaches that don't have that merit where you're coaching for your job. Obviously, Belichick, I think Tomlin, Harbaugh. Let's throw Shanahan's name in there because of his success. And then Andy Reid.
Yeah.
I think besides that, everyone's job. And I think to an extent, Sean McDermott, but I think I'm a Bills thing.
Yeah. I've been noticing that too. I don't, I wonder how safe he really is. I wonder if, if he doesn't advance next year's playoff, I wonder if he's kind of shipped out.
The guys like him, but I feel like it's one of those things where with the Bill, cause that was a take I had for a Bill for, our cover one, which is a Bills outlet, Greg Thompson comes on here from time to time. And I asked him at the beginning of the year, what are the odds that if this doesn't work out, Sean McDermott's out? And he said, probably not. But I think after this year and everyone's starting to realize, because is it me or do the Bills remind you now of like the Patriots between 2006 to like 2014?
They were
always dominant, but could never win.
Yeah. That is interesting. Yeah, I can see what you're getting at, where they're like, they're always in the mix, but like, they're always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Yes.
I can definitely see what you're getting at there. I'm wondering if it's going to be the same kind of thing that the Eagles went through right before they moved on from Andy Reid, where obviously he's a great coach. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's, he won in Philly. He took him to the, four straight NFC championship games and a Super Bowl.
Yep.
But he never got over the hump, and not getting you over the hump will get you fired.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it ends that way, where it's like good coach, but we just need someone who can win it.
I think next year is the case for him with that, where if next year they don't get over the hump, then I think that conversation seriously starts to happen. It's kind of like Mike McCarthy in Dallas, where it's like, unless Sean Payton comes knocking, then I think McCarthy's gone. But I feel like with him, it's like, hey, we want a playoff game, but I feel like next year it's, hey, you got to break the 27-year curse. That's just...
Yeah, something has to happen, yeah.
Exactly, something has to happen. But then going back to the Patriots now, look, the one thing I want to say too to all the fans out there is if they are not super active, like, because I feel like 2021's free agency threw off a lot of people, besides like us, like the people with the Patriots where it's like, oh, but we're not doing this, we're not going out there and signing guys, we're not like spending our money, even though we have money. I'm like, sometimes you just got to let it simmer and wait. Things like, look, bringing in a Jabril Peppers, look what that did. So there's a certain things where I'm not saying they're going to go bargain hunting again this year, but you let them wait and go. Because for one, it's not like this year doesn't feel like 2020 where it's like, oh, they have to get better now. This one is just, hey,
yeah,
it's not like you have to build a 1,000-piece puzzle immediately. No, this is, hey, find the final pieces and get them to fit. That's what this free agency is going to be for me. That's what I look at when I look at this.
Well said.
Like when I look at the Shrine Bowl too, it's one of those things where you look at, hey, the maybe not so well-known guys, maybe look at the, I don't know. I know Witherspoon's still in there too, but I feel like it's one of those things where his name's kind of...
He's gotten really hot. I know. That's he dropped thing. Out of the Senior Bowl earlier today. That was upsetting for me personally.
I just think that with – I think with him, it's just one of those injury things. Plus, I think a lot of the points where if the guy has something nagging, they're just going to say F and wait till either the combine absolutely. Or the pro day.
Yeah. Which I think is probably the right decision. You want to obviously showcase yourself, but anymore. You just don't want to get underwear Olympics. You just don't want to, like, get hurt and make it worse. So mm-hmm. I can understand that.
Yeah. And the one question I was actually raised earlier is by the same Giants fan who was kind of like, we're both happy for competency. Should Patriots fans be mad that they passed – like, for Giants fans, they got Wandale Robinson and for us, we got Thornton – over Pickens, or is that just like a like it is what it is? Because I don't look at it like 2019, because that's what I always say, where I'm like, yeah. You know what, it's not 2019. Like, we don't know what Tyquan is because we didn't get the full extent of him. Plus two, he had some moments, but he's another guy where if you literally run out of core of, say, someone new, Parker, Bourne, and Thornton, that's cool. That's a cool four wide receivers. And then maybe throw in, I don't know, say if Meyer stays, or if you want to go find some random person out there, just be my guest.
Yeah, I don't know if Patriots fans should be upset that, you know, they took Tyquan over Pickens. I know that Patriots fans are upset. I don't know if that's necessarily the right case there, because they're different players, right? I think when you look at Pickens, obviously he has the highlight reel catches. And so everyone's like, oh, that's the guy. They should have taken that guy. He doesn't have the long speed, and that was something the Patriots went into the draft for. They were like, yeah, let's just get fast as fuck. Like, just everyone they took, they're like, yep, this guy's a burner, that guy's a burner, that guy's a burner, bring him in. And so they went with the fastest guy. And I think that towards the end of the year, we started seeing what Tyquan could do, right? You started like seeing like, oh shit, like he's getting vertical.
Cincinnati, issue was, Miami.
Yeah, issue was, you know, the teams didn't think that Matt could get him the ball because he was constantly under duress or whatever the case is there. And that, you know, that obviously bore out, but I wonder how it looks with competent pass blocking. If that connection looks a little better, because Tyquan got open a fair bit. Anyone who tells you like, oh, he's not getting open or whatever, they're not watching the All-22. They're just looking at the broadcast and they're assuming, oh, well, he didn't get the ball. He wasn't open. Not the case. He is getting behind the defense with regularity. It's just not, obviously not connecting, because in order to take deep shots, you got to protect long enough for to take the deep shot. And that simply wasn't the case, especially down at the end of the year there. Cause I mean, the O-line had just completely crumbled by that point. It was just like, yeah, we're just gonna have to, you know, throw it short and make it happen. Cause the deep ball isn't working cause we can't block it up. So I don't know if they should be upset. I think I like what Tyquan offers. That pure speed element is very good. People will be upset. I think it's going to be one of those things. People are going to complain and cry. I mean, people were upset that, you know, they took Tyquan over Sky Moore, and then Sky Moore went out there and looked awful all year. So, you know, it's like, we'll see. I think I feel the same way about really most positions in the draft at this point. I'm just like, year three.
Yeah.
Give it the first two, three years, and then you can evaluate them. I think we're all just too comfortable making snap judgments on players before the time is up, right? Like before the time is right. I know people who want to move on from Mac Jones. I mean, those are the people who didn't like him in the first place. People are saying, hey, move on from Justin Fields. Again, didn't really like him in the first place. If you remember at the start of the year, there were people saying the same thing about Trevor Lawrence, which is absolutely ridiculous, but there were people saying the same thing about Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, oh, wow, he's actually good. Oh, wow, look what development can do. Zach Wilson, I guess I have to shoot him some bail as well. Like, we'll see what it looks like in year three.
That's more of accountability, I think, than on-field play.
Yeah. And then Trey Lance as well, who hasn't done – legitimately hasn't done a thing. I think he's played like four games. And people are, you know, upset and wanting to move on from him. But again, give it 3 years. Same kind of thing with these receivers. I think you can compare Pickens and Tyquan after 3 years and then be upset there. I know that's not what's going to happen. People are just going to be upset now. And every time Pickens makes a play, they're going to be like, this guy, they could have had him, la, 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 la. Whatever. I don't think it's an egregious pick, like the Harry over over Samuel. Debo or Brown. And I know Debo's the one the one that hurt me was AJ Brown, though, because he was a big Patriots fan.
Yeah.
So that only made sense. And then they took N'Keal Harry. So that hurt. And this is coming from someone who liked N'Keal Harry. I did like him. I didn't like him more than AJ Brown.
I took a chance on him because he's a Toronto-born guy. So I know he grew up a lot in the States and stuff like that, but he was born in Canada. So like whenever I say Canadian in the NFL, I always like have a bit of an appreciation for them. Like Javon Holland, for example. I know he's on the Dolphins, but like I always cheer him.
He's very good.
That's the other thing too. But speaking of AJ Brown, we're going to shift gears now. I know, obviously, look, you and I, we talk Patriots, but we have Championship Sunday this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We have Philadelphia, San Francisco. One thing I'm going to say is there's a video I found. Well, it's actually kind of funny because you basically were talking about how Andy Reid got fired. And I saw a TikTok today literally about the Andy Reid firing and how the Eagles have been this, but then the Chiefs have been basically unstoppable since here. But I saw another TikTok that I like from last week. I don't know if you're going to get the audio or not, but can this man go into the link Sunday and beat? Can that man go into the link and beat the Eagles Sunday? That is Brock Purdy.
That is excellent.
I'll send it to you afterwards.
Can he go into the link? Absolutely not. I think he's going to get squashed. But I think the game's going to be a lot closer than we think. Just because that defense is legit. I think individually speaking, the Purdy hype kind of cooled all the way down after last week, right? Everyone saw it and they're like, ugh. He didn't play great. He didn't play great in the first half against Seattle either. I think the shine's just kind of coming off. And I think
he's looking like a rookie.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want your rookie quarterback looking like a rookie in the NFC Championship game, but all the same, I think Philly's defense is legit though. I like them all across. I don't love their linebackers, but I think, you know, their secondary is phenomenal. Their D line is disgusting. I don't know who allowed them to assemble that amount of talent in one year, but I think it can get real ugly for San Francisco, but I think score wise, it'll be kind of reined in. I think, you know, what is it? The 2.5. I think it'll probably be a 3.4 point game. So
I honestly can see a very similar game to Sunday where they play Dallas, where it's like, you know, like I know there's a 2.5, but when I look at the 46.5, I'm thinking like a 17-14 football game. I said the same score for there, but I think this game's also going to come down to which quarterback screws up the least. And when it comes to that, I trust Hurts to get the ball more.
Yep.
But the only thing is though, which secondary is going to come up with a big play? Because look, we saw Fred Warner balling out. And if you get that, who's arguably the best linebacker in football right now.
I don't even know if it's an argument. I think he is.
Yeah, I think he is.
Who's his competition at inside linebacker?
I'd say probably maybe Parsons, if anything. But,
he's an outside. I mean, at this point, he's an edge guy. Yeah, he's an edge guy at this point. I think it's Fred Warner.
Yeah. And I feel like he doesn't get the recognition he deserves for that. Even to like the other guy I really like, who you and I have talked about before, like Hufanga, is an absolute stud at safety for the 49ers as well. Both guys are all pro. Both guys are going to the Pro Bowl. We'll see if it ends up happening. But when it comes to this, like I was thinking about it today. I'm like, okay, when it comes to quarterback, I take the Eagles. But the only offensive positions where I take San Fran is at running back and at tight end. Tight end's not a very far margin, but I think Kittle to Goddard, it's just like kind of here and here where
– yeah. Yeah. I can see that. Kittle didn't have a great year. And Goddard had probably his best year. But in terms of like just, you know, producing when he was on the field, I think it's closer than people think, but I would also give it to Kittle. I think he does more with the ball in his hand than Goddard does. I think he's a little underrated, George Kittle, which is weird to call a player of that caliber underrated, but I think he's a little underrated in his yak ability. We've been seeing it since he got to the league that like he can run through tackles and he can make it happen with the ball in his hands. And I think people kind of take it for granted that like yak from tight ends is not really all that common, right? Like we think about all the special tight ends in the league. You think of someone like Darren Waller, he's not like a monster yak guy. You think of someone like Travis Kelce is, but that's just because he's kind of ridiculous. Mark Andrews isn't really a yak kind of guy. So when you see a tight end who can, you know, catch the ball and just Hawkins make it happen, you're like, okay, cool. That's great. I think that's a little underrated. And he's always kind of in the right spot at the right time. We obviously saw it in that game where the game on Sunday where he caught the ball and he wasn't even in the pass pattern. He was pass blocking and then just kind of leaked out and Purdy hit him up the seam. And I was like, all right, well, we're just going to make this happen. I think that's a good place to look if you're looking for like who can change the game. I think it's going to be there. I like, obviously, you know, Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. But I think that what Philly has on defense in their secondary is enough that you need a third wide receiver to step up. And I know, you know, Juwan Jennings is a fine receiver. He's not
that killer X factor.
Yeah, he's not going to be the one who, you know, changed the tide. Because, you know, Philly has, you know, Darius Slay. They have, you know, James Bradbury on the outside. So you can account, you know, have those account and then go from there. And I think really C.J. Gardner-Johnson is going to be the big X factor, because San Francisco likes to get their players in space. That's, like, been their thing for who knows how long. They're just like, hey, we're just going to get Deebo in space and let him create. And so at that point, you just need a good tackling safety / slot or whatever, wherever it is they put C.J. Gardner-Johnson, because he kind of plays everywhere. I think he's going to be the one to stop, you know, Deebo from taking a 4-yard pass 70 yards up the field and you know, breaking the game open. So I like Philly. I like Philly's defense better, and I like Philly's O-line. They were just embarrassing. Dogs. Just embarrassing the Giants. It was disgusting. You're like, wow, they're just caving them in. And
as Jason Kelsey bully.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And you're just like, yep, cool. I guess Leonard Williams doesn't even matter here. They're just like moving Dexter Lawrence, who hasn't been moved all year. They're just moving him out of the gap.
Unbelievable, like, season from Dexter.
Holy cow. It was incredible. And the depth they have on that O-line is insane. You have someone like Andre Dillard, who's going to be a free agent this year. Just putting it out there, he's going to be a free agent this year.
Manifesting.
He was their first round pick, you know, in 2019, and he's a good player, and he's on the bench because Jordan Mailata is just a better left tackle than he is, and Lane Johnson obviously, you know, is a stud right tackle. Landon so Dickerson. You have they're one of the few teams that goes three deep at tackle, and you're like not even worried about a guy getting hurt because you're like, yeah, there's going to insert a dude in there who can play, and it's like, cool. I like their O-line, and that's where I think the game is going to be won. It's going to be a game in the trenches. Obviously, Nick Bosa, so you kind of have to worry about him. I think Armstead's going to be neutralized. I'm not worried about that. I think Philly's going to cruise. There, like I said, the score's going to be close, but
yes,
it's going to be one of those. I don't feel like Philly is in danger at any point.
Yeah, I want San Francisco to win. Like, San Francisco is the team I'm going to be rooting for to win. But, like, thinking about it from a logistical standpoint, thinking of it from a realistic standpoint, you got to go with the Birds just because the Birds have shown it all year.
Yep.
And also, I hate how everyone, like, how we're saying everyone gets mad and negative. Everyone's been doing that for all year. Like, people did it with Minnesota, but then I feel like after the Colts came, everyone kind of saw Minnesota. Like, they are who we thought they were. Shout out to Dennis Green. But with Philly, I feel like everyone's like, you know, oh, but they had a Georgia schedule. They had this. They had that. Go out there and show that you're the better team. You
exactly
have 60
exactly.
minutes of hard aggressive football, but more with one of the trenches. I think this game's gonna be won with the run game. Either Miles Sanders or CMC.
Yeah.
It's gonna come down to who can maybe, you know, get those elusive like tackles and break through for like 10, 15 yards. Like, don't just like run into the wall and then go down, run into the wall, shimmy your way out of it. Like, that's the kind of game I can see. There is one player though on the other side of the offensive line that I am looking at who I'd love in the Patriots, but I don't know if they'd afford him. And that's Mike McGlinchey, who's also going to be a free agent after this year, too. So it's just one of those things to keep in mind when, for a Patriots fans, from that perspective, it's like, hey, there's a couple guys out there you can watch for. Like, I don't know if they'll be in Mike McGlinchey's wheel, like in his pay grade, but we'll see.
He fits what they do. So it really will just come down to whether or not they offer him money or if San Francisco even allows him to. Yeah. You know, to leave. But I can see that. What's really funny about Mike McGlinchey is if you ever look him up on Twitter and look through like the photos after searching his name, there are a lot of pictures and clips of him just getting ragdolled. And I'm like, you're a better player than that. Once or twice a game, he's just getting thrown by a dude, and you're like, okay. This past weekend, Micah Parsons just absolutely just chucked him. One arm just threw him. It was like watching Reggie White. I was like, holy shit. But McGlinchey's a good player. So I don't want anyone to think just because, you know, they're seeing clips of him get thrown around that he's not a good player. He is a good player. He just has like one of those a game though.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of those things. It's not like Trent Brown where it's happening multiple times a game. Like, if it happens once a game, it's like you get the best of it. Even if you're an offensive, like, you're the best offensive lineman in the league. But just going back next Sunday quickly, I said this after the game. If you're Bill Belichick, do you give Dalton Schultz a look if you're going to trade one of your tight ends, or do you think that's just another issue where it comes down to money?
I don't, I, I don't think you give Dalton Schultz a look, just because at this point, what you're looking for at tight end isn't necessarily like someone to come in and start immediately. I think you have to draft the tight end.
Dalton Kincaid, okay.
Right. Like at this point, because again, the way I'm, well, just based on how I would look at roster building, it's like, all right, you have, you know, Jonnu and you have Hunter Henry. We talked about it earlier. We don't think both are going to stick on the roster. Fine. But you don't need someone to come in and immediately. It's not like 2020 where you needed someone better than Ryan Izzo.
I have someone. Schoonmaker from Michigan. It's just like the perfect. Okay, it's too perfect.
Yes, I'm curious on where he goes though, because I thought he'd be a day three kind of guy, like fourth round, fifth round. There are people who have him mocked in the sixth, and I'm like, whoa, like are y'all just low on him, or am I just too high? Like, what do we?
It's a lot of the PFF mock draft simulator. Yeah. It's a lot of people there. I see like pick 210 at the 210th pick and stuff like that, where I'm like, you may want to look a little bit sooner. Like, you may want to look like, hey,
yeah,
latter half of day three, beginning of day, like late Friday night, Saturday afternoon, look in that range for him to go.
Yeah. A player you mentioned earlier, same kind of thing, Zay Flowers. All of those PFF mock simulators, they're like, oh yeah, fourth round. And I'm like, yeah, but he's not making it out of the first. Like, he may make it into the second, but I think he's going in the first, just because he's another player who's, as the process is going along, I don't know, if you ever just look at, again, just look up his name,
yep,
you'll see that over the last like 6 days, everyone is in on Zay Flowers. Same thing with Devin Witherspoon from Illinois, the cornerback, who I love. Anyway, I think he should be the pick at 14, but he's another player who's just rising really quickly, and you're like, whoa, everyone all of a sudden is like, oh yeah, day one, maybe day two, but it's definitely looking like, you know, he's going to go early. So that's where I was confused with Schoonmaker, because I'm like, what, like, I thought he was better than that. People are like, oh yeah, you can get him like at the back end of the draft. He may not even get drafted. And I'm like, that's just wild to me.
There's just a lot of people that are like, you know, because that's the thing with the draft. I feel like everyone kind of thinks that like at this time of the year, they're a draft expert. I'm not a draft expert. But then like, it's one of those things where just watch the film, watch these guys play, look and zone in into like who you want specifically, and then go from there. Like the other players would be like, look, for example, a Michael Mayer. But like, look, he's going to go too high. I just don't have it in the Patriots' plans. And then there was another player I was thinking of. Oh, yes, if you're looking for defensive, I'm still looking at guys like potentially, I think DeMarco Helms is coming out this year. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But someone like him, there's another corner from Alabama whose name I'm blanking on really hard right now.
Oh my gosh. He's a safety, but he might not be. It's Branch. Can't remember the first name.
Yes,
but
last Branch.
Yes. Yeah, he's a player that some people have him as a corner. He's a day two pick to look at. Someone look at, I think he goes day one.
Ooh.
I think he goes day one. I think the versatility, I think he has the opportunity to be one of the first safeties to go. And people are just not quite caught up with what, I think when it comes to the draft, I think it's really important to read what the quote unquote draft experts are talking about. Not just people who are big on the draft, but I mean like the television analyst, right? And I know people will be like, oh, they don't know what they're doing or whatever the case is. A lot of the times though, these are guys not projecting on what they think, they're projecting on what they're hearing, right? Yep. So if they're up there saying, hey, you know, so-and-so is going to go, you know, day one, everyone's like, what, this guy sucks, there's no way, he sucks, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't matter if he's hearing from the, you know, from people in the league, like, hey, we like this guy, he's going to go day one, then adjust your mocks accordingly, you know, like that's just, yeah.
Yeah, but even – and also, too, Toto, the linebacker as well, if they are looking for linebacker depth as well, would be a good addition as well.
Yep.
But, look, when it comes to the draft, like we have months to talk about this. Well, you and I will obviously chat it up again, but then it's just one of those things where it's like – I feel like Patriots fans have just, like, a high standard of, like, drafting, but at the same time, too, it's like, guys, you got to lower your expectations. Don't be shocked if you trade back from 14, even though I do think we keep the pick at 14 unless Bill's player gets taken. Like how – the whole
how Justin about, Jefferson went.
Yeah, and I don't buy that. I just like I remember. I will never forget this. That you only took Duggar because of McKinney going, and I'm like, it wasn't until this year that Xavier McKinney really shined and flourished. It's Kyle Duggar,
and even then, Duggar's been better. So that was something I never bought. The Duggar thing still irritates me to this day because
he's gonna get paid soon.
A lot, they're going to pay him a lot of money. But a lot of the draft experts, thinking of Lance Zierlein, Dane Brugler,
you even put McShay and Kuiper in that category,
them as well. And I'm thinking on, oh my DJ. God, I'm blinking on his name, not DJ, it's Lucky? Matt Miller.
Oh, yes.
Matt Miller. They all had him at, like, you know, third or fourth best safety. He's probably going to go second to third round. And then he got picked, and everyone pretended they had no idea who he was. And I'm like, what? What is happening? Like, what? All the TV analysts were like, oh, yeah, that's a good pick. And then everyone on Twitter is like, this guy, they took a D2 safety. He sucks. And I'm like, you've never watched him. If you think that, you just never watched him. You're just reacting to the fact that he's a D2 safety. But he went more or less where he was supposed to go, and he's been as advertised. So I don't know.
Yeah, the only other thing I'm going to say quickly when it comes to the draft is just, like, I'm always prepared for a few things. Just, like, look, when the people on TV are talking, listen to what they're saying. Don't be like, oh, this guy's an idiot. We don't know who to draft. It's like, look, the guy sitting on his recliner with a few beers in is not – everyone's uncle is not the best draft analyst that you know.
Absolutely.
It's that. And then the other thing I have to say for when it comes to preparing for the draft, if you're watching ESPN, be prepared for someone to get drafted and then a list of all their dead relatives, just because that's how it likes to operate.
Yeah.
This person's here, but let me tell you about his uncle who was shot in a drive-by when he was seven.
It was really bad. What was it, 2019, where it was just like every single player, and you're like, what are y'all doing?
2022 as well, I remember that.
Holy cow.
It's like Austin Jackson had a really depressing story. It's just like all these guys, you're happy for them, but at the same time, too, I'm like, every time I watch the Monday Night Football pregame as well this year, and they had like Joe's wife on doing like the story, like the one about Matthew Judon at a camp with kids with special needs, I'm just like, you guys already know how to tug at the heartstrings. Damn you, Disney. But I want to get back quickly off the Pats for a second, because we'll obviously finish with them, but because we have another game to talk about where everyone's calling this the Kansas City Chiefs Invitational, even though, look, get there eight times and then we'll talk.
Yeah.
But I want to see – I just like – there's something about the Bengals that's likable.
It's Joe Burrow.
It's Burrow, too.
He's so imminently likable. I'm like, yeah, this guy's fucking cool.
One thing I loved and hated about last week's game, and even though this is going to sound bad, besides every 5 minutes Jim and Tony being like, oh, by the way, DeMar Hamlin's the villain. Like, guys, it was fantastic to see. If you buy into any of those conspiracy theories, you can fuck right off.
Holy shit. I just discovered that, I think it was yesterday, Kyrie Thompson was tweeting about it, and I was like, there's no way people actually believe that. And then I looked into the comments, and people were like going hard. And I'm like, this is why I'm living in the Matrix.
Who? Side note, by the way, I'm here to announce next Tuesday night, we'll be back on the YWC Football Talk podcast.
Oh, Kyrie Thompson.
Yes. So that's the thing I just want to get with that. But the other thing with the game I love is how before the game, it's Leslie Frazier. Why hasn't he got any head coach looks? And then at the end of the game, Lou Amarillo, why is this guy getting head coaching looks? I'm like, with Leslie Frazier, I'm going to say this, people, look up his number with the Vikings. He was with the Vikings when the Vikings were terrible.
Yeah. He was there with during the Josh Freeman game. So, yeah. I don't know, you know.
But now, and then with the Bengals, I think this game is about neutralizing Mahomes, and the Bengals have proven three times that they can do that.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where, look, he's going to make plays. I feel like the ankle's going to be a non-issue. Like, when everyone, too, like, yesterday, he's walking straight, he's walking like this. I'm like, he's on cortisone, guys. He's getting he's getting his ankle shot up. He's probably going to rest after the season. Like, just like,
it's also just practice.
Yeah. He even said, too, in his press conference, he comes out and he's just like, oh, yeah, I did nothing light. Like, yeah, you see him stretching and seeing other stuff. He's not doing anything physical. They're basically doing as little as they can, and then Sunday afternoon is when they're going to truly test out that ankle to see. But when it comes to this game, like I said, I got to go with what I know, and I'm going to take Cincy, but I'm also going to say this. This game will be very similar to last year's, I think. Give me Cincinnati, let's say, like, 28-24. Somewhere in that range.
Is that your prediction?
That's my score prediction, yeah. I'm going to say 28-24, where it's like, I don't know, it's close all game, but then like when it's like 21-21, Chiefs just get a field goal, but then Bengals march down the field
and do it. Okay. Yeah. I can see that. I think I'm also going to take Cincy, just because Mahomes is hurt. I don't think that the injury is going to be a non-factor. I think it was a big factor on Sunday, even though he came back in the second half and played, you could just see he wasn't driving the ball very well. And Jacksonville just kind of wet themselves, and that's how the game ended. I don't think Cincinnati's going to do that, even though part of me wants Kansas City to win. And
he really doesn't play in non-Florida Super Bowls.
And
look it up. I'm not joking. I'm not kidding.
Is that a fact?
His three Super Bowls. Think about it. Who did he play in his first Super Bowl?
Patriots.
Where were we?
Oh, was that Hard Rock?
No, that was Jacksonville.
Was it Jacksonville?
Yep. It was Hard Rock 3 years ago.
Okay.
And then 2 years ago was Tampa.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
And okay. Okay.
But I'll say this, though. The Chiefs were my preseason pick because throughout all the Buffalo hype and all this stuff and everyone going, oh, we don't know about Patrick. I'm like, guys, he's still Patrick. You can put the 2020 Patriots receiving cast with him, and he's going to be in the AFC Championship game.
Okay, so funny story. Funny that you say that. I was listening to a podcast earlier this week. I think it was the GM Shuffle with Mike Lombardi and F.A. Obede. And one of them made the comment that the Patriots receiving core wasn't that much better than wasn't that much worse than Kansas City's. And then you look at it, and you're like, yes. I mean, they have Travis Kelce, but like as far as like pure receivers go, it's not a great group. They have Juju, they have, you know, Marquez Valdez Scantling, and they have Kadarius Toney, who obviously I think is significantly
young better. Joker.
And he's like good. It's just, you know, apparently they don't buy him out there in Kansas City as far as like being a legitimate game-changing piece. And I'm like, I don't really understand that. But part of, like I said earlier, part of me wants Kansas City to win, and that part of me is the part of me that wants Eli Apple to just shut the hell up. So I would hate for I want him to lose personally. I want Cincy in the Super Bowl. I just want Eli Apple to somehow lose. I don't know. He's just a supremely annoying player. So I'm just like, man, you go out there, you don't really do much, and then you have a whole lot of shit to talk. And I'm like, cool, I guess. Like,
and your mom defends you on Twitter.
What happened? His mom, Annie Apple, and she's been doing it since he was in New York.
Yeah, but like, they got tired of him in New York. They got tired of him in New Orleans. The only thing I'll say is, though, and this might be controversial, I think him going Cancun on three wasn't a dig at DeMar Hamlin. I think it's just like, you know, where they go like, like this all through 1, 2, 3. Like, yeah. I think that's what he means. I think everyone just took it as he's ripping Hamlin, which, look, I don't think any player has done or will do.
I think that's a stretch. I
think it was taken way out of proportion.
Also, I'm not going to lie. As much as he annoys me, that was so fucking funny.
Yeah.
Cancun on three. Yeah, that's excellent. It was the follow-up that bothered me when he got into it with Shaq Lawson. I just didn't like the way he handled that. I'm like, this guy talks a lot for someone who's just not that good, but he's on a winning team and he's not individually getting burned. So it's tough to, you know, I liked it after the Super Bowl though. Cause you know, he played when they played the Rams and he got beat and, you know, they let him have it online. That was a great time. That night was awesome. They were absolutely taking it to him. And I'm like, sick. But in this game, I'm taking Cincinnati. I think they have the better defense. I think, I've been saying it all year. No one really agrees with me, but I'm 10 toes down on this one. I don't think Kansas City's defense is very good. I think they're getting by in the secondary. I think they're kind of getting by. Chris Jones is obviously very good, and I think Frank Clark is turning it on as well, and I like Nick Bolton. I just don't think as a unit that defense is very good. I think people are pointing to Watson, their corners, like, oh, he's pretty good. I'm like, he's fine. McDuffie hasn't impressed me in any way. Juan Thornhill, he makes a play every six games. Unfortunately, he made one last week, so we won't see one this week.
There's one player I do like on their defense, though, and that's Karlaftis.
He
has his moments,
but he's the third end there, and I don't know that he's going to have a significant impact. They have Carlos Dunlap is still there, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. He doesn't
really do it for me. I like L'Jarius Sneed. But again,
it's a fun name to say.
That is a fun name to say. I just don't think as a whole, their defense is very good. I think there are a lot of players I like, but I don't always like good players. Sometimes it's like players who like pop to me. I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of like that guy. I just don't believe their defense is that good. And I think they have the potential to be exposed royally against that Cincinnati wide receiving core.
I think so too. And the one thing I'll say that's been good about the Kansas City Chiefs all year is that a certain couple of someones haven't really said that much or been that active on social and have been annoying like they have in years past. I'm not going to say their names, but they may be related to a quarterback.
Okay. Yeah. One of those someones was very active last week. She was very active. And I was like,
I just haven't seen it at all because so last year with her, it was a chain reaction. Buffalo does the We Are the Champions thing in the wild card.
She goes
spraying the champagne after they beat the Bills. I was just like, okay, when you do actions like that, I'm like, okay, Bills, you're going to lose next week because you did stupid. Sure, even though she doesn't play, I'm like, you don't do that after winning the divisional round.
Yep.
Go. So that's all I have to say about that, because I just didn't want to mention the names or anything like that. Yeah. That's all.
The him in those two, he's been pretty quiet, and thank the gods for that.
Exactly. The other thing I was going to say with the Patriots, too, before we wrap up, is just that, look, today there was a tweet that was released by someone that – I'm going to get it up because I know Pat's Pulpit got their hands on it as well. So I got to, like, do my, like, on-the-fly research just because, look, I said, look, because the Pulpit guys are cool, and also at the same time what was I going to say? I really like the tweet, and it's something that I wanted to address with you, and it's right here. Also, there's a report that came out as well, so give me a second. Bill O'Brien will almost certainly not remain the only addition to the Patriots coaching staff. That's great. Where is this tweet? Oh, so basically, it was about moral of the story was the tweet was about all these like past third down running backs, you know, Shane Vereen, Kevin Falk, James White. And then Mike Reese was tweeting out about the Patriots running back room for next year that are under contract. So you have Montgomery on the IR, spent all but one game on IR. You have JJ Taylor, you have Kevin Harris, you have Pierre, you have Mondre. The top question that Mike says is, Bill O'Brien, does he bring back the traditional passing back? And the Pulpit guys tweeted out, wanders in Pierre Strong Jr. Do you find Pierre Strong in that role, or do you use those guys more as traditional runners and you shift Ramondre out to be that dual threat?
Oh, no. You bring in Pierre and you let Pierre catch the football. He is explosive. holy cow. He's a player who excites me. He excited me from the draft and seeing him in camp, even though he missed a ton of it, and he kind of just ended up behind the eight ball and ended up playing mostly special teams throughout the year. But he is electric with the ball in his hand, right? Like he gives them a type of speed they haven't had in who knows how long. He is incredible. He's probably the fastest running back they've had since Shane Vereen. He is fast. I think you can kind of see what they were trying to do with him towards the end of the year as they, you know, as we got deeper into the year. Especially you saw it in the Cardinals game. Yep. You saw it in the Cardinals game. But even in that second Bills game, he caught a couple passes there. They are grooming him for that pass catching role. And I am excited to see that because he is the kind of player who will run away from linebackers in space. You don't want to cover him with a linebacker. And I think the Patriots, I think Mike Reeks makes a great point, like he always does, because he's just the best in the business. But I think he makes a great point about the Patriots lacking a passing down back. As good as Ramondre Stevenson is, he's not elusive as a pass catcher.
Let him be the catches it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like he's let him do what he does, and they can't ride him the way they did this year. They kind of just like, I mean, he played a ton of snaps, even though they had Damian Harris. And he kind of wore down towards the end there. You saw he was hurt. He had hurt the ankle. And he kept saying he was fine. He didn't miss any games. But, like, you could see, it's like, he doesn't have that same wiggle he had earlier in the year. I think allowing, you know, Pierre to come on the field on those third downs and making him your third down back is better for everyone, because when you get an explosive player on the field and let him do what he does, and you also give one of your best players, your best back, obviously, one of your best offensive players all around, you give him a little bit of break. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. Like, it just came across my mind, because even though, like, look, it's May, not May. I wish it was May. January 26th. These are things you got to think about for next year, because when you look at next year with not only the division, but the conference as a whole, look, the Jets are still a TBD. I don't know if they're going to get Aaron Rodgers. Quite frankly, I don't think they will.
No.
I think if anything, Rodgers and Brady, give me a wrong opinion. Give me a different opinion if you think this, but I think either of them stay where they are or they're going to retire. That's just
correct. I would agree. I think it's they're either in Green Bay and you know, Tampa respectively, or they're not playing football.
Yeah. Which, by the way, if Brady does retire and Tampa decides to go fire sale, number 14 would look great in New England. I'm just going to throw that out there right now.
Yeah, I know they just signed him to a new deal, but, you know, make it happen.
He had a bad year, too, but
they're not going to compete without Brady.
But the thing, too, is with everyone being like, because I saw the tweet this year, and you always got to look it up, and I have two bold predictions I'm going to say to you right now about second-year players I don't think are going to have good years next year. That's Javonte Williams, and that's Breece Hall.
That's fair. They're both coming off of injury.
Yeah.
And backs with injuries are always dicey.
Look at 2024 for them. Look at 2024 for Kyler Murray, which, look, I was called crazy for when I said that the Patriots could probably not have to trade 14 to get D-Hop, but then people said it was crazy.
Nope, that's correct.
But then that came out. The tweet came out from reports that I think it was Jordan Schultz, even though some of his stuff's been a little wonky or wacky, but he basically came out and said, hey, you're not going to have to trade a first-round pick to get him, and that's being proven so. So I think it's either they hold on to him or someone's going to pay a goofy ransom to go get him, a.k.a. Everyone says Dallas for him, but I don't think so because Dak's contract's there, the running back situation, and also, too, you got to pay CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, you have CeeDee Lamb. You just extended Michael Gallup. Dalton Schultz needs to be paid.
Well, that's the thing. He was on the franchise tag last year.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was franchise.
Oh, I didn't even. So that what?
Just
so
came
how
in.
Does
my,
he not, how does he not have a new deal?
Right, acting up.
So they franchise tagged him and then just didn't work out a deal.
I think so. I'm gonna do the typical YWC football talk research on the fly. I know the one thing I can tell you right off the hop is Dalton Chase Schultz played at Stanford. That's like the whitest name I've ever heard. but 2022, franchise tag worth $10.9 million.
That's crazy. So they'll probably end up letting him go. That's so wild. I know they have was it Peyton Hendershot, and he's kind of fun.
Jay Ferguson too.
Yeah, but I think neither of them are Dalton Schultz. And I know he had a couple of boneheaded plays to end last week's game, but that is not a player. I don't think Dallas can necessarily afford to let him go. Although at this point, a quick mini rant.
Floor is yours.
At this point, I am so sick to death of the weapons conversation because every single team that has lost in the playoffs this year, everyone is just kind of saying like, oh, they don't have enough weapons. And I'm like, what? Like, if they have no weapons, what do the Patriots have?
Yeah.
Right? Because these are teams like with Buffalo, they have, you know, Stephon Diggs and Dawson Knox. And apparently people don't like Dawson Knox in Buffalo, which is weird to me. But they're like, oh, he's not very good. And Gabriel Davis, I was never on Gabriel Davis, but they have, you know, Khalil Shakir, and I think he's a pretty good player. But apparently people don't think Buffalo has enough weapons. People don't think Dallas have enough weapons. And I'm like, how many pieces do you need? You know what I mean? Like, you have CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup, Dalton Schultz, Tony Pollard, and Ezekiel Elliott. Those are your skill players in Dallas. How is that not enough? Like, where at what point is enough enough?
Yeah. It's like the Bills Mafia thing I've seen coming out recently is – they're realizing, oh, hey, Gabe Davis, like, wide receiver two, which I think he's a fine wide receiver two. He's not anything special.
I don't like him.
That's the thing. He's more like, I've always kind of been on the Gabe Davis hype train. I just think that last year in the playoffs, in the Miami game, everyone kind of looks at Gabe and is just like, oh, yeah, he's going to do this, like the 4-touchdown game where it kind of gets blown way over proportion. Mm-hmm. But then the thing I'm going to circle back to with Bills fans is they want a receiver in the first round, even though all the experts, guess where they have them going, is linebacker.
Yep.
And
safety, they need safeties. They don't have any. Like, you know, you have Jordan Poyer, who one of my favorite players. He's absolutely gone. He gone. Issued the apology. I mean, sorry, issued the goodbye. You have Damar Hamlin, who was hurt.
Who knows if he'll be ready for September.
Exactly right. And then you have Micah Hyde. Get healthy
first before you ask if the football player is ready to go.
Exactly. Micah Hyde is the same situation. He has a neck injury. I know they, you know, opened his practice window prior to being eliminated.
They also said that he was going to play if they had made it to the championship game.
Sure. I don't buy that, though. Like, it's a neck injury. I don't know that you
proceed with caution.
Yeah, players don't usually come back from neck injury. So I'm just like, you need safeties. I know everyone wants more weapons. But at some point, you have to get the fundamentals, like the foundation down. You know, Tremaine Edmonds is a free agent. So you obviously going to need a linebacker there. Their pass rush is non-existent.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, do we expect Von Miller to be fully back to himself next year? Because that's the thing I always say with ACLs, where it's like this year everyone was kind of dunking on Michael Gallup and Chris Godwin because it's like in fantasy they were like wide receiver 20 and like wide receiver 29. Where I'm like, guys, it's like look at Saquon. 2021, he had a pedestrian year. What did he do this year? He broke out. So that's why next year I look at guys like Chris Godwin and Michael Gallup to bounce back and have really good years. Yeah. Meanwhile, that's why I said the comment about Javonte Williams and Breece Hall, because they're not going to be the same player next year. You need to give them time. Look at Tom Brady. 2009, and then 2010, he was the first ever unanimous All-Pro Associated Press MVP. So that's where I kind of look at it with that. And then with Buffalo, too, here's the other thing. That offensive line.
Holy cow.
I think besides Dawkins and Bates, You got to reevaluate. Yeah. And Mitch
Spencer Morris, Brown, excuse me. He's not great. I know Roger Saffold. He's a journeyman. And they need to upgrade him immediately. His journey needs to continue. He's not very good. I think Buffalo has a lot more holes than people are giving them credit for.
Running back too.
I don't know. Yeah. Devin Singletary is a free agent. I know they have James Cook, but I think with the way that they utilized their running backs down the stretch last year, I think that kind of tells you where they think James Cook is right now. And that's not to say he won't get any better, but you're projecting a pretty big – yeah, you're projecting a pretty big leap there. And Nyheim Hines, they added him, and he didn't do anything except kill the Patriots, so.
Yeah. That's the thing, too. And then I think for them, though, more than anything, I think next year, if they don't go far, I think it's a complete house clean because of the way – Ken Dorsey's offense has looked, the way that Leslie Frazier's defense has looked. Like, it's just one of those things where something happens. Like, they just fired their safeties coach today, actually.
Which was crazy to me because with all those injuries, I'm sure he did the best they can. I mean, Dean Marlowe was out there playing safety for him. Like, he can only work with what he has.
Yeah. And I still think Edmonds and Poyer are gone, but I think if anyone wants to stay and take a hometown discount, it's them. And the other thing, and the Bills fans are starting to latch onto, which I'm going to applaud Bills Mafia for recognizing this, letting free agents walk to get comp picks. You don't have to re-sign every single free agent. So for Bills, I'll give you your kudos there. A couple of quick things with the Pats, though. When you look at this whole process, that's the thing I was going to say, too, with the Pats, with the division next year, and not that's what I was saying before with the division, the conference as a whole, because I'm going to say this right now. For as much as I don't want them to succeed for what the quarterback has done off the field, Cleveland's going to be a much better team next year.
Sure, yeah.
Pittsburgh, I'm still not ready to write off, but I'm not ready to say anything for them. I think 8-9 or 9-8 is their wheelhouse. I think
they have an incredible coach, and that's going to get them much further than they have any business going. Because Mike Tomlin just wills it, and I'm like that team was not a 9-win team, but not a 9-win team. Yeah, I know. I can't believe they brought him back, but continuity of staff is important for a young quarterback. So I at least applaud them, thinking of it in that term. Like, all right, cool. We have Kenny Pickett. We don't want to give him a new OC in a second year. I can understand that.
I think that I just think that with them, there it's going to be that too little, too late. They'll be in it, but I don't think they make it. Baltimore, I don't know. The AFC South, I think Jacksonville is the kings of that division. As weird as that is to say,
It's a bad division.
Yeah. It's both sides are bad. Yeah. And then I'm going to say this right now, but with the West, if they get the right coach, I think Denver can potentially be a team in the mix. I'm not ready to fully go on and say, hey, they're going to do this, but I think you only have one way to go but up. Yeah. And the Raiders, I don't know what they're doing in Vegas, honestly. Like, if that's the thing, too. I'm going to say this. With the report coming out of they want to get rid of Waller and they want to get rid of Renfro, who would look great in a Patriot uniform, by the way.
Absolutely.
Why would you go after Tom Brady if you're getting rid of all your weapons?
I know if you're ready to rebuild. Yeah. That doesn't make sense to me. And then that offensive line needs a lot of help. That defense is absolutely putrid. I really don't want Tom Brady to go there. I can't watch him on that team. I can't. And I know right now everyone's like, oh, but they have such a good offense. And I'm like, no, they have Devontae Adams. Yeah. That's who they have. And they have Darren Waller. I think he's a good player. He just doesn't play a lot.
He's inconsistent. He's either hurt or there. He also does
not available a ton.
Exactly. And he also does those things like, too, even when he goes to fantasy football, he's either puts up like a 20-point week or he's putting up like a 5-point week. So it's like little things like that you got to pay attention to. So that's the only thing I was going to say with the Pats, because I know Jets fans are on there. We're going to get Aaron Rodgers' high horse, which I think they're either going to get someone that they're massively disappointed in, or they decide, hey, you know what? We're going to give Zach Wilson one more chance and run it back with the quarterbacks they have and see where they go from there. Because I just, but here's my thing though with that. That's what I'd like to see happen. But in reality, Joe Douglas needs to do a swing for the fences kind of trade because his job's on the line.
But I think he's going to swing for the fences and knock down Jimmy Garoppolo from the quarterback tree. And if that's the best they can do, I don't buy it. I just don't. I'm sorry.
I just don't buy it either. But I do think, though, that both Saleh and Douglas's jobs are on the line going into next year. Like, when I look at Coach Hot Seats, it's them. Mike McDaniel and his vaping, I don't think is on the line anywhere.
But apparently Miami fans, there's a subsection of Miami fans who wanted him gone. Again, what are we talking about? Yeah. Like at this point, like every fan base wants all of their coaches and all of their players gone. And I'm like, what are we talking about? I think he's fine as well. They're another team that keeps getting brought up in the whole Brady thing. And I think that's an error. I think Tua is a fine player. I don't think you need to bring in Tom Brady and essentially end your relationship with Tua because Tom has what, a year or two left. You're now going to have to restart from quarterback. I guess it's great if you win the Super Bowl and all of that, then everything's worth it if you win the Super Bowl. Absolutely. But I don't know if they do. So
I'm the same way. It's just like one of those things when you look at it and you're like, can you really do this? Can they really do this? Where I'm just like, no. And also to the whole people recording him while touring a school. Like, guys, don't.
That was creepy. That's creepy.
Like, he's touring a school for his kids, guys. Like, he lives in Florida.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys. He's going to retire. And I'm also going to say this too selfishly. Look, I use the expression, all the others got to go out back, which is pretty fucked up, but it's the truth. I selfishly just don't want to see the quarterback I grew up watching and loving become a shell of himself.
I don't want him to suck. I just don't want to see him suck. Yeah.
I don't want to see him. It's like how, like, I think I made a reference to the show. No, it was a different show. I did make a reference to the show, South Park, earlier. I don't know how big of a South Park fan you are, but do you remember the Guitar Hero episode? Do you remember the Guitar Hero episode?
No.
Okay, so in that, there was a game called Heroin Hero, and the whole thing was you chase a dragon, but then you never catch the dragon.
Oh.
I'm using that metaphor, not doing the heroin, but like chasing the dragon, like chasing a Lombardi.
Yeah.
Like, does he really? If he hadn't won in Tampa, I'd understand it.
Sure.
But if he got his chip in Tampa, and then this year we just saw mistake after mistake with him, and it's just like, I don't want to see Tom suck. I want to see him go out.
And I think we're actually much closer to him sucking than a lot of people are letting on. I know that the situation in Tampa wasn't great. I know that they had some coaching issues and the line was bad and all of that. But I don't think he was free of fault. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, no, it's just, you know, put him on this team. It's going to be, you know, back-to-back, you know, back to good old Brady. And I'm like, no, he wasn't playing super great. And it's okay to admit that.
And even to the whole thing in San Francisco where it's like, oh, my God, he wants to come back. He's taking all these pictures. I'm like, guys, it's his second time ever playing at Levi's Stadium in his career. Yeah. He's gone back home, which he hadn't done for the first time to play there in 6 years. So it's just one of those things where everyone has to chill. And I think you're going to get an announcement one day of him basically confirming his own report. Because I think last year when Darlington and Schefter broke it, I think he's like, no, I want to go out on my own terms.
Yep.
And so even if he retires this year, I just got a vibe from him that it was like Drew Brees 2 years ago where his parents are right there. He like jogs off. I'm just like, I think he's done. I just don't think people want to admit it. And I feel comfortable admitting it. And also to you, Tom, if you were listening to this, I used my tears up on you last year, buddy. So when you get it, you just get a thank you from me and no one else. And then I'll be there when you accept your red jacket at Foxborough with the new stadium.
Yeah, I agree. I do think it's over, I think it should be over. I don't know if he goes out the way he goes out. I remember that 2015 Peyton Manning year, right, where he was just absolutely, you know, terrible.
Carried by an unreal defense.
And he was just like actively playing bad. And I have some friends who are Manning fans. And I just remember how hurt they were. And I'm like, I don't want that for me. My guy's not going to do that. No, he's going to go out on top or whatever. That was tough to watch. When he threw all them picks against Kansas City, I remember I had a friend who texted me. He's like, bro, I'm inconsolable. I'm like, yeah, this is rough. Like, I just don't want that for me. I don't want to watch Tom Brady, you know, end up like that. And it unfortunately feels like we're getting really close to that just because there are things he's doing that he's never done. And you can't put it on anyone but him. So.
Couple quick things. Even though Brady got his ass kicked, and that's a game that made me hate Derek Wolfe, he almost beat them in that game still. It was 28-18, folks. Let's remember that.
Which game? The championship game? AFC?
The game that got Dave DeGuglielmo fired.
Oh, yes. The 2015 AFC championship game.
Holy shit.
That was tough.
Yeah. And then the other thing I was going to bring up quickly was, look, I have to talk about this, but the Patriots are going to Germany next year.
Oh, yeah.
We get a 9:30. Yeah. I'm not saying I'm going to that. I don't think I can afford that. I'd rather go see them in Foxborough. But we get a 9:30 football game. We get to get a wake up and some Patriots, or I assume in the case you being a father, you'll already be awake.
Yeah, I'll already have been up for a few hours there. I'm excited about the Patriots Germany game, just because I think it's always cool just like seeing them play somewhere else. I remember when they played in Mexico City in 2017.
Yeah, that badass photo of Brady walking down the cage.
That was so sick. That was so sick. Or even prior to that, 2012 when they played the Rams in London.
London.
Yeah, that was sick too. And then
the Buccaneers in 2009.
Yeah, I just like watching them play somewhere different. You're like, oh, this is weird. And like, how's the crowd look? I like all the crowd shots. Like, oh, what are they wearing? Like, is everyone in like team appropriate gear? And then you're looking at just like a modge podge of just like dudes in different jerseys and throwbacks, and you're like, cool, love it.
Yeah, like my parents actually this past year, they were around the time I came to Boston. They were in like London and Ireland and all that stuff. And my dad's a Saints fan, so they went to the Saints Vikings game in Tottenham.
Ooh, that was a good game.
It was a good game. But then the thing they were saying was, though, like they met people from like Sweden who were just wearing random jerseys that just love the NFL. And they were like going to Germany and doing the same thing. You had fans from like all over Europe, because that's the thing the NFL is slowly starting to realize is, hey, there's not just fans in London. There's fans in Germany. There's fans all over the place. And there's actually, if you go onto the NFL's YouTube, they did a behind the scenes of like getting it ready for that game. And they literally moved into the stadium. Like it was either that the Tuesday night of that week, there was a soccer game with Bayern Munich. Wednesday, the NFL took over, and there was so much dimensions they had to change, just adding stuff. Like the thing that doesn't get talked about too is like the equipment managers for Seattle were saying that like in June they went over to Germany to like do a site survey to see like where they put everything and stuff like that. So there's a lot more that goes into those games than people think. And you know what? I'm gonna like that day because it's 9:30. For fans, if you're already awake or if you're waking up, you wake up, you watch the football game, and then you watch Red Zone all day and right into Sunday Night Football. So it's like that chef's kiss of football action, if you will.
You get the whole day. Love it.
Yes. You get the whole day. But anyway, it's always a blast getting to talk Patriots with McGarvin. Of course. We'll be wrapping it up. We'll be talking. Enjoy the Shrine Bowl. One thing I'll say, too, is before we go, Pro Bowl games, I'm kind of tempted to check it out just to see what it's like.
I mean, I've watched the actual Pro Bowl games for way longer than anyone had the right to. So, like,
it's only hurt
they're doing something new. I don't know. It's just like, oh, football's on. I guess I'll watch it. This one's more just – I know it's just a skills challenge. So I'm like, oh, I'll tune in. I'll see what they're doing. I'm into it.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I'll watch it too. And then also I know because football's not around that much longer. So even last weekend when the football was bad, I'm like, guys, we only have two more weeks left of this. So enjoy it while you can. Yep. That's what I'm going to say to you. Enjoy the football while we can. We have 7 more months to talk about the Patriots before they kick things off again for 2023. But anyway, guys, enjoy Championship Sunday. This has been episode 209, rightfully titled, fun name to say, shout out to Legarius Sneed.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.